Design Centre, we really are keen to host the conversation and get as many people involved in the conversation as possible from all the different disciplines and backgrounds. And as an example of that, in 2008 we held an event at the National Theatre, which sought to try and highlight the amazing work that goes on in the very broad field that I would define as the arts. But there are many artists and designers that are actually engaged in emerging technologies issues and helping to really enrich the dialogue with regard to the ethical, social, political implications of those technologies through their work. And so it's a great pleasure to introduce our second panellist this afternoon, Alexandra Daisy Ginsberg, who is involved in this whole area of synthetic biology from the angle as an artist, designer and writer. So welcome to the podium, please.
Initially with just a great curiosity for the field and what it meant to the practice of design and how, what is it, you know, I've been looking in my research at what will designers be doing in the future, and it seems to be so much the discourse surrounding synthetic biology within the actual technology side of it is about design. This is the idea of designing biology. One of the questions I've really been focusing on recently is this idea of what's the difference between life and biology, and is there something different? As technology saturates our environment, it can be hard to distinguish nature from culture, and the principles of synthetic biology are kind of bringing the idea of engineering to living systems, and like literally this promise of yielding the fruits of the biotech revolution. So as biology and life with it are being transformed into materials for design, there's a lot of new questions kind of arising from an ethical, philosophical, cultural, as well as technological perspective. And the shift from industrial revolution to biotech revolution is something that, from a design perspective, is very interesting to me, because design is always acted as sort of the interface between a technology that's been developed in society and society itself. It's the way that things are conceived. And through my own research as a designer, I'm curious about how is it different in this set of circumstances. And I'm working on a project with a team of synthetic biologists at the moment. We were trying to come up for a tagline for the project, which is a set of collaborations between synthetic biologists, artists and designers. And we realised that we couldn't even ask this question, because the synthetic biologists who drew at Stanford and Amos Elfink in Edinburgh, they couldn't actually decide what they were designing. And I thought that was interesting. And then from my perspective, I was curious about how they were even defining design in this term. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the work that I've done, and hopefully this will begin to make a bit more sense about what on earth I'm doing up here today. So, through my own research into the subject, I became really aware of this kind of icon, the Tree of Life, and these three very distinct branches that this is the current interpretation of the Tree of Life, and that we're somewhere down there in the bottom left hand. And all of this engineering that's going on is mainly happening within the kingdom of bacteria. And Jim is looking at plants, and you know, who knows where it will go in the future. But how do you begin to even define the boundaries for the stuff? This in itself is a very artificial way of looking at the way the world is organised. It's a human construct for how we understand things. And one of my design proposals is that maybe we need a new branch of the Tree of Life as a way to actually construct a new domain to organise this stuff in our heads. And part of this was, the idea was this is a provocation, that this is probably, the amount of arguments I've now had about this diagram with various scientists has been very enjoyable. Like, should it actually be attached to the root, this branch? Should it be separate? Should it be more like a kind of 3D blanket sitting over the various branches? And it's been a really useful tool for starting a discussion about how we begin to culturally accept these kinds of engineered technologies that are being promised. Within this project, which I produced at the Royal College of Art a couple of years ago, came out a set of objects that were aiming to begin to explore the aesthetic possibilities of synthetic biology. We're being promised all this stuff that it's going to change the world, but what is it going to look like? How are we going to use it, and how will it change our everyday lives? Now, there are ways to understand the potential impact of this, that we can actually get a sense of what it might be, or what we don't want it to be. So within this project, I was starting to try to populate the synthetic kingdom, and I designed a series of products, which I'm not going to go into detail now, but each product was something that would be very desirable, like light bulbs that are produced, whether the lights are produced by bacteria, or printing inks produced by bacteria, and each was related to a pathology. So I was exploring this idea of products just being slightly misplaced, and I was trying to explore how do we get to the point where this is culturally acceptable, because we've got the products. For example, printing inks, this is plaque that forms in your teeth, a kind of biofilm. But how would you dispose of objects that are, or sort of technological objects that are produced in factories which are using these kinds of bacterial products? But there are whole new kinds of social structures that will have to be put around the way things are disposed of, recycled. And this was just a couple of years ago, a beginning foray into trying to get my head around this technology. So another of the diseases in this set of synthetic pathologies from the future was a pollution-sensing lung tumour that was related to two other products which had engaged in some horizontal gene transfer and unfortunately become misplaced. But in this future, the disease becomes a commodity in itself. The body becomes a place of unexpected manufacture, and there's this is an unexpected consequence of a synthetic biology revolution, that we begin to treasure these kinds of things. And the ultimate disease in the series was colonic alchemy, where your waste matter literally turns to gold. So the idea was that synthetic infection could be profitable and even beautiful, and although probably technologically impossible because you can't make gold from waste, it kind of raises questions about whether you'd leave your body to business or to science or to art. So the next project that shows is called Growth Assembly, and this was inspired by Jim's work. Unfortunately, Jim let me come up to the lab one day and ask him lots of questions. And Sasha Perfab and I, Sasha was also a student at Royal College of Art, we were really curious about this, which is how things are shipped around the world currently. And we wanted to look at synthetic biology as a fabrication technology of the future. How will the way we make stuff change if this kind of technology comes to the fore? And we've been looking at bacterial production, and whether new kinds of fabrication using engineered bacteria to produce material. And someone at Imperial said, oh, you should go up and see Jim in Cambridge, he's doing stuff with plants. And I wasn't sure what the connection was. Because we were really curious, if you buy a sofa, it's already been three times around the world probably before you get it. But what happens if we run out of oil? And is this the kind of thing, a consumer crisis like this, that could actually tip technology like synthetic biology into reality much faster than otherwise? So Jim showed some of this, this is stolen from his website. I went up to Jim, he was telling me about how they're looking at plant morphogenesis. And after about an hour and a half, I was like, well, what would these plants do? And he said, well, maybe they can grow things. So I think that he probably meant chemicals. But I went back to St. Lambs and said, Sasha, this is going to be the factory of the future. Plants are going to grow things. So we wanted to think about how a manufacturing technology could be completely disrupted. So we decided to design an object from this future where plants grow products. And we decided to design a herbicide sprayer. And this product would be an everyday product. And each part of the product would be grown by a different kind of plant. And you would harvest the different parts. So this is a nozzle that would fit on the end of the herbicide sprayer. This is a gourd which would hold the herbicide and grow the poisons itself. And in the end, you'd have seven different components. You'd collect the parts together, harvest them, and you'd have your finished product. And the idea behind this was to investigate how currently industry kind of focuses on standards and hardness, and we're not really used to thinking about consumer goods in terms of diversity and softness. and how a technology could completely change the way we look at the world around us and how it's made. And part of what we were really keen about the system was that it would be how you could solve this shipping crisis, and all the manufacturing instructions would be encoded into the DNA of a seed, so you no longer ship objects, but just information, but in hard form. So let's explain the next one. So after that, Jim still was very welcoming us to come up to the lab, despite the far future nature of that project. I'm going to show a quick film about a collaboration that kind of ensued after this project. EcoMind is an experimental collaboration between designers and scientists working in synthetic biology. In 2009, seven Cambridge University undergraduates spent the summer learning the tools of synthetic biology, which is essentially a new approach to genetic engineering. Using standardized sequences of DNA in a format that's called BioBricks, they learned to engineer bacteria. They designed their own BioBricks using genes copied from existing organisms, inserted them into E. coli, and created bacteria that secrete colours visible to the naked eye. EcoMind went on to win the International Genetically Engineered Machine Competition at MIT in 2009.
And joining us now is one of the winners of the iGEM competition. Welcome to Science Friday, Ms. Mullen.
Hi, thank you so much. Well, I'm part of the Cambridge 2009 iGEM team, and our project was called EcoMind. And what we were trying to do is to improve bacterial biosensors. They're bacteria that can tell you the concentration of pollutant in water. And they can do this because inside them they have a detector. So we developed two different parts, the sensitivity tuner, and this actually tells the detector when to turn on and when to turn off. So you have control over what level of the pollutant you're detecting.
And how does the bacteria show that it's on or off?
We use what they call the color generator, which means that bacteria changed color when the detector got switched on.
Wow, so they light up in a different color.
They actually change color, it's visible to the naked eye.
So let's say if you put a swab of the bacteria in a polluted river, bacteria would just change color.
Yeah, exactly. So you probably want to put a sample of your water on a bacterial plate, maybe not the other way around.
Well, how would you envision something like this being used other ways in the future?
As designers, we worked with the team to explore EcoMind's potential as they were developing in the lab. And together, we imagined the timeline proposing ways that living color could evolve over the next century. These scenarios, some of which are shown in this film, explore the different agendas that could shape EcoMind's use and in turn our everyday lives. One of the first real applications for this technology may arrive quite soon, a cheap disposable biosensor testing groundwater contaminated by arsenic.
Bacteria could also be used to produce natural colouring for dye. By 2015, there may be a profession of people who hunt for new pigments that the genes are responsible, bringing them back for use in the food and textile industry. By 2039, you can go to the supermarket and buy the simple probiotic yogurt for cheap personalised disease monitoring. The yogurt drink contains E. coli bacteria, which establish a colony in your gut. They monitor for chemical signals that indicate the presence of a wide range of diseases. When they detect a disease, they start generating the corresponding coloured pigment, producing an easily visible output to prompt you to seek a doctor.
2049 sees the rise of the Orange Liberation Front, a terrorist organisation from the Netherlands, who are angry because a biotech company in China has patented the gene for the colour orange.
In 2069, Google releases pollution mapping bacteria into the atmosphere that turn red in the presence of excess CO2. As the saying goes, red sky in the morning, Google health warning.
The collaboration meant that EcoMind is a technology that's designed from the start at both the genetic and the human scale, and with a long-term outlook. We found that design and science could have a meaningful exchange in the lab, which could prove useful in developing technologies in the future.
You know, I think it's a new term to most of the public, synthetic biology. You know, we've heard about all kinds of genetic engineering and stem cell research, but I think the phrase synthetic biology has not been used a lot lately. I guess we're going to be hearing more of it.
So that project has been really interesting kind of experimenting with what might be possible in such a interdisciplinary field anyway, with bringing in an extra group of sort of minds at a different kind of scale. And that's something I'm very interested in as I originally trained in architecture, so I think about a lot of this in terms of scale, and perhaps the expertise of the designer is at a human scale, or in terms of the objects and the things we use, and that sort of tied in with this idea of new kinds of applications could be a very interesting combination. And so this is, that project has been really useful to me in my research on this, which is called Synthetic Aesthetics. It's an NSF and EPSRC funded project with Drew Enzi, Alistair Elphick and James Halbert at the PIs. And the idea was to bring together synthetic biology, art and design to see what would happen as a research project. So again, coming back to this question of what does it mean to design nature, how do you design nature, and how do you do it well? And I think this is something that's definitely coming out of my own research, this idea that we might need to have new kinds of design tools to deal with this changing interpretation and use of life as a set of tools for making stuff. So within this project we have six pairs of synthetic biologists, artists and designers who've been spending time both in the lab and in the artists and designers studio. I don't think I've had time to go through each of them, but I'll just very briefly mention what each pair is doing. We tried to curate across synthetic biology, so we have everything from protocell science to plant biology to biobrick approach, and across art and design, so from music, bio art, architecture, smell design and art, through to product design in a very kind of corporate setting. And each pair spent 2 weeks in the lab, 2 weeks in the studio, continuing their collaborations. And amazing projects are coming out of it that perhaps are neither art and design or science themselves, but are useful in both ways and kind of provoking new areas of research within the field. So this is sort of halfway through at the moment, and we've got everything from human cheese to the world's slowest growing sculpture emerging from this project. So I'd encourage you to keep watching. So the whole project has been documented and analysed by two social scientists, and we're sort of exploring this idea that the boundaries between all these different disciplines and different kinds of scales of thinking is kind of very integral to the development of this, of the possible features of this field. So within this process, they've kind of gone through the residencies, all sorts of things, are kind of the field itself is blossoming. We ran workshops at iGEM, we've got a workshop at UCL this summer funded by the Wellcome Trust, where we're going to be bringing more artists, designers and scientists to learn about synthetic biology together in a workshop lab. And then hopefully next year, this will continue as a way of, perhaps a way of teaching in engineering as well as in art and design. So I'll just leave you with this question, because if anyone has the answer, that would be very nice. How would you design nature? And there's lots of links at the back.
Thank you. If I could ask...